Coming up on Tech News Today, we get a wrap-up on CES from Ayaz Akhtar and Paul Spain. They've been at the show. We'll find out what they like to see. Also, how the best of CES got compromised and why the Yoda phone is a charmer but doesn't have Yoda. All that and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, January 11th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com, use offer code TNT1, and they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media files, go to pond5.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Cheap iPhone? Rumor? Denial? Yes? No, who knows? Reuters reported Thursday that the Shanghai Evening News had a quote from Apple's Phil Schiller saying Apple was not interested in a cheap, low-profit iPhone. However, Friday morning, Reuters pulled the story, citing, quote, substantial changes in the Shanghai Evening News story. So nobody really knows what's going on.
The Wii U's first month sales numbers in the U.S. are out, and even though the console brought in more money than the original Wii in the same time frame, only 460,000 units were sold compared to 475,000 original Wiis. Total Wii U's sold, at least at this point, is 890,000, which is 19% less than the original Wii in the same time period. Then again, a higher price helps Nintendo. The company brought in $300 million since this launch.
A disclaimer at the bottom of the CNET page says that CNET's parent company, CBS, had CNET disqualify a Dish product from its Best of CES awards due to active litigation between CBS and Dish. The Dish Hopper with Sling DVR was a finalist in CNET's awards, but was disqualified. Dish's CEO said the company was saddened by CNET's staff being denied its editorial independence.
Security researcher Guarang Pandya of Unisys Global Service noticed that the Express browser on the Series 40 Asha phone he was using seemingly decrypted secure web connections like banking connections before passing them to his phone. Turns out Nokia says, yeah, we do that, but only on our own servers as we compress the pages and we promise we won't peek at your data. Now, Opera Mini operates similarly, though discloses the fact a little better than Nokia has. Services like Amazon's Silk browser or the Skyfire browser do not decrypt secure connections, but those connections will therefore be slower.
The world's second largest mobile operator, Vodafone, has apologized after customers in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa complained of lost emails on BlackBerry devices. The company blames the problem on a router error, isn't it always a router error, and said services are being restored. RIM, which is no stranger to service outages over the last couple of years that have affected millions of customers, has said it supports Vodafone's efforts to resolve the issue.
Earlier this week, it was reported that Microsoft was retiring Messenger on March 15th. Now, Microsoft has told Ars Technica that the Messenger service is not being retired on that date, but March 15th will be the start of the transition away from Messenger. The service will continue to operate for some time. The Windows Messenger desktop client will no longer be able to connect to the network starting on March 15th. However, other clients will remain unaffected.
Samsung is the latest manufacturer to get cold feet about selling Windows RT devices, at least in some markets. Samsung executive Mike Avery told CNET that Samsung's Qualcomm-powered RT tablet will not be sold in the U.S. Avery said the cost of educating consumers about Windows RT was too much compared to the anticipated sales of the device. Avery would not rule out ever bringing a Windows RT device to the U.S., just said it wasn't the right time.
New data from analysis firm IDC shows that the fourth quarter of 2012, quote, marked the first time in more than 5 years that the PC market has seen a year-on-year decline during the holiday season. Worldwide PC shipments hit 90 million units, but that's a 6.4% drop from the same time in 2011. This is despite the launch of Windows 8. In some good news, though, HP has held the top spot as the world's number one PC vendor and had its first year-over-year growth in Asia-Pacific in four whole quarters.
Personal Audio LLC is suing Adam Carolla's Ace Broadcasting and HowStuffWorks.com for violations of a patent issued February 7th, 2012, called System for Disseminating Media Content Representing Episodes in a Serialized Sequence. Personal Audio LLC won a case against Apple in July 2011 for violation of two other patents related to downloadable playlists, which led to licensing agreements with companies like SiriusXM, Samsung, RIM, and Amazon.
The Hill reports that President Obama has signed into law a bill that allows people to share the videos they watch on Netflix directly to Facebook. Now, sharing this information was illegal under the Video Privacy Protection Act, which required written consent before information could be shared. There's no word on when and if Netflix or Facebook will make this function available.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog, the best mobile experience for your website, and you don't have to lift a finger. You just make the content. It's 100% drag-and-drop functionality, and Squarespace has developed new templates with mobile-ready, responsive designs, which means your site automatically restructures to look great on whatever smartphone, tablet, or computer your visitors are using. And when you add an image to your site, 7 different versions are created automatically. So the right size of the image loads for the right device. Your site looks professionally designed no matter how it's used. And like I said, it's fast, it's easy to use, it's exceptionally well designed. Integrates all your website needs, domains, design, development, hosting, customer support. But you don't have to take my word for it. I'm just blathering on here. You go try it for free. You don't even have to give them credit card information. Just sign up for a free account. Start building your website. And if you decide to purchase Squarespace, use offer code TNT1 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That includes monthly and annual plans. Squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT1. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Now, we are all in different locations today. I'm still down here in Los Angeles, temporary location. Haven't set up the new studio. That's coming January 21st. Isaac Tar still in Las Vegas at CES. Sarah Lane coming from San Francisco today. Jason Howell in Petaluma. And Paul Spain from New Zealand. But he's in Las Vegas, joins us to talk about what's going on over there. Paul, you're a host of New Zealand Tech Podcast and the Channel Partner Podcast. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Glad you're able to wrestle up a connection there in Las Vegas. That can be hard to come by.
Yeah, the connectivity's been a bit rough. I think sharing them with the other 200,000 people here doesn't help too much.
It's a lot of bandwidth, and we mean bandwidth in that case. Let's start with what's going on at CES. Ayaz, you've got a chance to hit the show floor, right?
Yes, I've gotten to go, and I've got to see the major booths. Now, I've got to do this because I was hanging out with Nate Lanks, and I just met him in person, and he actually had an agenda. So I had no plans, and I just followed him around. So he took me like to the coolest stuff right away. I got to say, when we went to the Samsung booth, I saw that easel television. I got to say, the photos just didn't do it justice. It looks much better in person. That frame that people complain about that looks ugly in those photos, it's actually very, very pretty when you actually see it in person. It's like a chrome. But, I mean, I've seen the Sharp 8K TV. It was, you know, you get super close to it, like 4 inches away. You could just make out the greatest details. Not the 4K TV, but the 8K. But the weirdest thing I got to say I saw, Panasonic's 20-inch 4K tablet. Now, this
tablet,
thing is,
you say?
Yeah, it's a tablet. It's a 5.3-pound tablet. I don't know if – I can't remember if Panasonic said they were going to release this product or not. But this was – it's meant for photographers apparently. And you can actually remotely control a camera with it. I don't know why you would want to do that, but you could. And I guess for photo editing, it seems like – I guess a 4K display would be a little easier. Paul, I mean, you've been on the floor. What did you get to see?
Well, so many things. Yeah, certainly the 8K TV from Sharp, that's pretty impressive. I'd be quite happy to have Samsung's new 4K, that 85-inch TV with the frame actually looks absolutely stunning. Also, what I found interesting was the demonstration that Samsung were doing of Netflix actually running at 4K. Now, it sounds like there's going to be some hoops to jump through. You've got to be with a particular ISP for that to be useful. But I guess that fills in some questions about where we might get 4K content in the future. One of the other things I saw, which was at one of the startup events pre-show, was a social aggregator product called Channel, CHNL.IT, which was probably one of the few of those sort of startup products that stood out and looked like something that I might use. So that's one that I've signed up for. Lots and lots of cameras and audio accessories and all sorts as usual. Not too many of those things really jumping out, though.
It was definitely strange to walk into Central and see the lack of Microsoft. So Intel is always usually located right by Microsoft. Intel's booth, pretty much the same thing you've always seen. Lots of laptops everywhere, tablets. Got to see that Lenovo 27-inch tablet. I was sitting around, it was just sitting on a little coffee table. So it was just kind of strange to see it out in the wild. But the lack of Microsoft, that was replaced by Hisense. And I had no idea that they were going to take up that giant booth that Microsoft's had for years. So it definitely felt a little different out here. Paul, did you find it to be the different kind of mood here? Because to me, it's you know, a massive humanity, bunches of reporters doing things. But the lack of Microsoft seems a little bit strange.
Yeah, it was a little bit odd. But, you know, it does make sense in a lot of ways for Microsoft to do their own thing. You know, they don't have so many products or new products to show off. And it was somewhat odd at CES last year because it was Microsoft that brought me over. And they actually didn't have any news to announce, and they weren't able to tell me a whole lot. So, you know, I can see why it makes sense for them to separate themselves from CES. Interestingly, there wasn't so much of Windows 8 this year, even though last year we were seeing a fair bit of it ahead of release. Probably the one Windows 8 product, other than the Lenovo one you just mentioned, was their new i7 tablet, the name of which is just I've just forgotten for a moment, and that looks really nice with its 11.6 inch screen, full HD, and the ability to run that i7 tablet separately, but also plug it in and dock it, and to be able to flip it around 180 degrees, so you can use it sort of in an open or closed type manner.
I believe that's called the ThinkPad Helix. Sarah, you didn't come this year. Do you feel like you missed out? I mean, we've seen all the announcements, but do you think you had to see any of these in person, or do you seem like it seems like it was fine with press releases?
Well, you know, you get this at large conferences when you have a bunch of people going, and the people who get left behind say, this is something you can cover, you know, from the comfort of your own RSS feed. And you know, I've always sort of thought, well, that's not really true, but that's, you know, sort of the easy way out. But I got to say, not being at CES this year, I feel like I'm avoiding a lot of germs. I'm avoiding a lot of, you know, sort of bad air conditioning. And, you know, the thing is like, it's not a very well-kept secret that journalists don't really like going to CES. I mean, if you're actually working and covering all this stuff, there is that fun element of seeing all these things in person. For example, that 4K Sony easel TV, you're like, that's actually really, really nice looking. We didn't get that impression at all when we were looking at, you know, the photos. Oh, look, my cat's in there. All right. Well, anyway, looks like I have another co-host today. And but really, I've actually enjoyed following CES from afar because I feel like there's this whole, you know, Microsoft not being there, too many people, all of that stuff is just stripped out. And I can actually absorb some of these product announcements, you know, from with a little bit of a safe distance.
Yeah, obviously, cat's more exciting than CES.
The cat electronic show. I think seeing it from a distance has been interesting. I mean, I'm moving, so I'm not sure that my stress level is a good judge, because I've got all kinds of other stresses going on. But I definitely don't feel like I'm overwhelmed or like I'm missing things. I actually feel sometimes when I'm at CES like I'm missing more there than I am, because you get caught up in the hype. However, from a distance, there's still some things that catch your eye, like the happy fork. We've been talking about that on and off all week. Sarah, you found something that caught your eye.
Yeah, this is TechCrunch had a little of a video that they put up. They had sat down with the CEO of a company making the Yota phone, not Yoda phone, although that would be awesome. Yota with a T phone. And what's interesting about this is one of those, I guess you could say, gimmicky phones that's trying to do something new. So it's a phone, but it has an e-ink display on the outside, so it can mirror anything that's displayed on your phone's main screen. And the creator said, what's neat about this is that since once the e-ink screen is live, it's not going to pull any more from your battery life. That could be something that's up all the time. So for example, if you've got a map, you know, that you need to reference, or maybe some sort of a to-do list or a boarding pass or something where it's like, you don't want to keep like unlocking your phone or draining your battery or that sort of thing. You could have that as a second screen. And of course, there's just not only the advantage of not draining battery life, but the fact that e-ink is kind of cool. And I don't know, maybe if you're somewhere and you need to kill some time and, you know, you're in some bright sunlight, you could do a little reading. I think a lot of people are probably like, yeah, that's, who would ever have that? And this is not a product that you can buy right now. It's just a prototype. The unit that they were showing off in the video was, I guess, off the production line, you know, in the last month. So it's really new. But it's 9 millimeters thin, so, you know, nice and thin. And the company says that when they have a final production unit that's ready to ship, it'll be even thinner. I think this is kind of neat. I don't know. What do you guys think? Is there any room for an e-ink / LCD phone?
Maybe I'm very excited about this. I know it sounds a little silly because but I always like the weird things like devices that have two screens. I think there's a laptop. The Tai Chi has a screen on the other side of where you would normally have a screen on your laptop. There was like the Alex Reader that had two screens, and Microsoft's tried this before to have Outlook and things to show up on the back of your laptops. The idea that you could save battery life, and I do a lot of reading on my devices, so it'd make a lot of sense that you have something not killing your battery all the time on the back. And plus, e-ink readers, they're really, you know, they're good for eye strain, or they're good to not have eye strain because you could read for long periods. But I think this would finally make some differences when it comes to, okay, everybody's got a phone, everyone's got an Android phone, they all look the same. What could make it stand out? A second display might be that kind of, you know, that hook.
It just strikes me as one of those CES things that gets a lot of attention, is cool, and that we'll never really see in either reality or we'll just won't see catch on. There's been so many products like that. I hope I'm wrong in this case because I think it is pretty interesting. And it may just be more of a demo pleaser than a real life useful thing. Paul, did you get a chance to see it?
No, I didn't see that, but there seem to be a number of innovations in the mobile space, and this is one that I think, yeah, if they can find a good use for it, and it doesn't add too much to the weight of the product and so on, you know, why not incorporate it? One of the other ones was one of the new smartphones from Sony, which is waterproof. So we've seen all these waterproof coatings over the last 12 months. So they've got one there that you can have in a meter of water for up to half an hour without causing any damage. And of course, then there's all the wireless charging, and the wireless charging consortium were here. One thing I didn't know is that the Galaxy S3 actually has all of the capabilities for wireless charging built in. It just doesn't have a wireless charging cover available from Samsung. So I tried one of those on my S3, and it pops up a little message on your screen. It knows that you're charging it wirelessly. So, there's a few of these things that are out there on the edge, I guess, in the mobile space that, you know, I'd expect over the next 12 months we'll see, you know, some of them become a lot more common.
You know, one way that we've always decided what was cool at CES was to look at the official Best of CES awards. Tech TV awarded them way back in the day. Then G4 took that up for a while. CNET took over Best of CES in 2006, and they've been doing it ever since. And they've courted a bit of controversy this year. They were going to make the dish hopper with sling, That's the DVR that does the commercial skipping automatically, as well as integrating Sling so you could watch your shows wherever you go. That was going to be a finalist in the Best of CES Awards, and we don't know what it would have done, whether it would have won its category, whether it would have got Best of Show. CNET posted that to its Twitter feed. Dish posted it to its Twitter feed on Wednesday, and then CNET removed the Hopper from consideration because CBS is suing Dish over the Hopper functionality, saying that that's not okay for them to skip commercials for people automatically. CNET put this at the bottom of their Best of CES pages and at the bottom of their write-up of the Dish Hopper, saying the Dish Hopper with Sling was removed from consideration due to active litigation involving our parent company, CBS Corporation. We will no longer be reviewing products manufactured by companies with which we are in litigation with respect to such products. Now, Dish's CEO and President Joe Clayton put out a press release saying, hey, we're saddened CNET staff is being denied its editorial independence because of CBS's heavy-handed tactics. This action has nothing to do with the merits of our new product. Hopper with Sling is all about consumer choice. And they basically, you know, as you might expect, are upset about that. The winner in the home theater category, which is where the Hopper would have been, was the Vizio 5.1 soundbar. And the winner of Best of Show was the Razer Edge gaming tablet. Now, this is going to bring up, already there's a BuzzFeed paid content, The Verge, All Things D. Everybody's writing about this. Do we think that this casts doubt on whether CNET should be awarding the Best of CES? I mean, Best of CES should be available to any product that is on the show floor, and the Hopper's on the show floor. Whether CBS likes it or not shouldn't play into this, should it, Ayaz?
Well, I mean, it shouldn't. I mean, editorial independence is really important. When I was working for other companies and was concerned about what I had to write in case a company got upset at us, like I really got sick of that kind of idea. If CNET's going to be doing this, I mean, I think there's a reason why they put that disclaimer up there. They want to say, look, we don't want it to be this way. It's responsible to show the disclaimer, and it's trying to show that they're being independent where they can be. But I mean, I think to a lot of people, it's going to CNET's going to lose a bit of credibility if this is the kind of guidance, as it were, that they would get from their parent company.
Now, I still know a lot of the CNET editors, and I worked with them very closely. I know they're not happy with this. Sarah, what do you think?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, if we can just look at, CBS obviously doesn't want to diminish the CNET brand. They don't get anything from that. Is this something where a review, whether it's positive or negative or anything, could be submitted as evidence in some sort of future litigation, and this is one of these things that CBS is forced to do just to protect itself?
I don't think they're forced to do it, but I think CBS could be afraid that a win for the Hopper from CNET, a CBS-owned property, could be brought into the case, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's like when you had all those documents in the Google Oracle case, when you see all these trails of, hey, look what these guys said. Your own company said it was cool. Your CEO said it was fine to use this. If CBS's arm, their online component, is saying this is great, it might hurt them in the future. But I mean, that probably wouldn't be a huge deciding factor in any kind of court case. But it just seems like it's very unnecessary.
Now, CNET on its Twitter post responding to Danny Sullivan did clarify that this policy does not apply to CNET News. It only applies to CNET reviews. But, Paul, what does that say about the state of reviews journalism, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole thing's fairly disappointing. And, I guess my hope is that they find somebody else to handle this for CES next year, because I think it puts a bit of a black mark over them, and they should be able to cover things both from a reviews and editorial perspective as well as from a news perspective without that sort of interference. But I guess it is somewhat the nature of media today, and it's not what it once was, and there are a lot of financial pressures.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, this sort of thing happened before CBS bought CNET. When I was working there and CNET Networks owned CNET, before it was sold to CBS, we had a partnership with a company. We were going to bring in their shows and put them on CNET TV, And because one of the investors in that company was involved in a hostile takeover bid for CNET Networks at the time, they axed the deal. It was bad for CNET TV, in my opinion, but other considerations took priority. And that's what CBS is doing here. They're saying other considerations are going to take priority. That's fine. CBS has the right to do it. If they think that they need to do that for their case, that's great. But unfortunately, that means that I have less of an opinion of CNET Reviews than I used to. And I hate to say that because Lindsay Turrentine does such a fantastic job at CNET Reviews. And this is nothing to do with her. But it means that I'm going to be worried about the integrity of reviews in the future. And I really do think that the CEA should take Best of CES away from CNET. And it pains me to say that because I don't want the folks that I know that have worked there and even the folks that I don't to lose that. I thought it was great when I worked there and they got it. But this is just not okay on CBS's part. And that's how I feel about it. Let's take a break and thank one of our sponsors for today's show, Pond5. If you're an independent media creator and you need some stock photos, you need some stock videos, you don't want to run into legal trouble. So you want some professional quality stock media that you don't have to pay over and over and over for, royalty free. You pay once, get to use it. And you want good stuff. That's what Pond5 is all about. They give you instant access to a vast selection of stock media. The world's largest collection of royalty-free video photos, vector illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, customizable motion graphics templates, 3D models, and more. The collection is growing by leaps and bounds every day. And all the content on Pond5 can be downloaded instantly for legal use in virtually any media production at the best prices anywhere. And if you're an artist, you'll love Pond5 too, because they're shaking up the traditional stock agency business with an open, artist-friendly marketplace for professional content. For artists selling on a site, Pond5 gives you control over pricing, and that's unheard of. Plus, they pay out 50% royalties for each and every sale. That's a higher payout than other stock photo marketplaces. As a result, the prices are unbeatable. The range and quality of the content available is unbeatable. So if you're a media maker or artist, check out Pond5. Take your creativity to the next level or upload your own content and put it to work at the world's most artist-friendly marketplace for stock media. This month, you got a special offer, too. You can get 50 free stock media files by going to pond5.com/TNT. That's P-O-N-D, the number 5.com/TNT. We thank Pond5 for their support of Tech News Today. Okay, so Samsung, we heard in the news, she's getting cold feet about those Windows RT tablets. What's going on here, IS?
Well, we had the head of Samsung's PC and tablet business, Micah Barry, was talking to CNET, and he says that that Samsung won't be releasing its Windows RT device in the U.S., he was citing modest demand and said it would require a heavy investment to educate the customer on what Windows RT was. He said to keep prices low on RT tablets, Samsung had to make compromises like putting less memory in these devices, and they didn't want to have those products out there. And in the non-US markets, it's unclear what Samsung's going to do. Now, Microsoft's obviously had a lot of trouble trying to explain what Windows RT is compared to Windows 8. Paul, with Samsung getting cold feet, as it were, does this mean trouble for Windows RT as a whole, or will the other manufacturers just fill in that gap?
Yeah, I think in some ways it validates Microsoft's decision to launch the Surface because it really shows they can't rely on other parties to come in and necessarily promote all of their products. So. Yeah, I'm not sure how the other players are going to go in this space, but probably out of all of the brands, Samsung would have been really one of the most important ones for Microsoft, and it definitely is a little bit of a slap in Microsoft's face, and it will make it harder for them to market this product. I think what would help would be if there was maybe a smaller version, something in that 7-inch to 8-inch category, where we're seeing Apple and Samsung doing so successfully, but it's at its full size. There are, I guess, some limitations that will make people think, well, we may as well be buying a tablet with an Atom processor and a full version of Windows 8 because they're very, very similar price point.
Sarah, what does it say that a company like Samsung that markets like 37 different types of phones, different sizes, makes up the word phablet and puts it in their ads, when a company like Samsung won't back Windows RT, what does that mean?
It means that it doesn't believe in Windows RT. I mean, Samsung, you're right. Samsung is very good at making lots of different devices, some that seem very similar to each other. We were just talking about, you know, some of its phones that are coming out that are a little bit confusing on yesterday's show. But this to me says Samsung, I mean, Samsung doesn't have unlimited resources. This is Samsung saying it doesn't make financial sense for us to invest more time and effort and sort of the education of customers, not only to let them know what their options are with Windows RT, but why it's better than some of the other options that we have in our lineup. And we don't want to make the tablets, I don't want to say worse, but less powerful in order to keep prices down, and simply not worth it.
It seems like, you know, Windows RT was crafted so you can run them on devices that used ARM processors. These are supposed to be lower powered devices. Tom, it doesn't look like it's going to go that way, especially with Samsung doing this. Does Microsoft have to really turn up its education when it comes to RT, or should they scrap it?
Yeah, no, I think they need to turn up their education. I think we might be seeing the effects of Microsoft coming to market with the Surface. It may be a little bit of leverage here. I mean, I don't think Samsung's lying when they say it's going to cost a lot to educate the marketplace. But I think you may be seeing a little bit of a veiled criticism of, hey, Microsoft, you came to market with the Surface RT. So you got to go out and pay the cost of doing this education, because he did say, we're not saying we'll never bring it to the U.S. market. Now is just not the right time. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little backroom leverage going on here saying, look, Microsoft, if you're going to be out there competing with us, then you have to bear the cost of explaining the difference of Windows RT. We're not going to do it. Once the consumers understand it, then we'll come to market with our own device. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
I hear that, Tom.
Sorry, my mute was on. It's Samsung. They're probably doing the negotiation tactic, but I mean, I don't know if Microsoft can adequately explain this to anybody. I mean, in the whole, you know, year up to the release, Microsoft did a really poor job of communicating this on their blogs to educated people. I don't know how they're going to manage to explain this on television commercials or 30-second sound clips or any of those things to go, oh no, it's like Windows. It looks like Windows, but it doesn't run all of Windows things. I think it's just a really sticky situation.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that NPD report on gaming. Year-end console report shows the Xbox 360 continuing its streak to 17 straight months of being the top-selling console, not shipping, but selling, at 1.4 million. Sony did not announce their PS3 numbers. The only thing we do have to go on is IDC showing PS3 shipping more than Xbox in December, but obviously Xbox won the sales race here. Nintendo's best-selling console was the 3DS, 1.25 million. Its second best-selling console was the original Nintendo Wii, 475,000. The DS sold 470,000, and the Wii U only sold 460,000 in December. Now, it did launch in November in the U.S., and so that's 890,000 since launch, over 41 days. And Nintendo says, hey, we've made $30 million, which is more than the original Wii had made at its 41-day point in its life cycle. But the Wii U is actually more expensive than the Wii. So it doesn't mean they're selling more. It means they're just making more revenue.
Well, and remember, when the Wii was originally on the market, there were shipment delays. So, I mean, you could argue that the Wii would have sold more had there been more units at launch.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. In December, overall hardware sales dropped 27% to $4.04 billion. Now, supposedly mobile is taking a huge chunk, but we still see millions of game consoles being sold. Are these declining numbers, you know, indicating the death of the console market? Or is this actually showing the console market, even with a stiff competitor like the easy, cheap mobile gaming that you can get on your phone and your tablet, consoles still have a good place? Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the place of the console is probably changing as they become much more of an entertainment device. I guess Netflix sort of sitting at the center of that. We certainly haven't seen much. Well, it doesn't appear to have been much movement of the Wii U in the New Zealand market. But it's interesting to see that the figures, you know, across Nintendo's product range, actually, when you add those up across the 3DS, the Wii, the DS, and the Wii U, that's actually you know, some pretty substantial numbers of product they're selling. They're well over 2 million. So you know, I don't think this the space is going away anytime soon. And you know, I would think when we get a refresh of the products from Sony and Microsoft, that certainly should give the market something of a bump, and those sales should go up. It's just, I guess, a matter of timing of when that happens.
Ayaz, do you have any thoughts on this marketplace?
Yeah, I mean, I think it feels like these products are reaching saturation at this point. Xbox 360 has been out for, seems like forever. I think it's like 7 years or something like that. The PS3 is very old. The 3DS, I mean, these devices have been around. Well, 3DS is relatively new, but it's just an iteration of these devices. So because they've been around, I don't know how much longer they can keep selling these devices until that refresh, like Paul's talking about. This year, when that expected refresh happens, I think we're going to see, you know, a new burst of sales, because these devices have become more than just game devices. They're everything boxes. Microsoft's done an amazing job making the Xbox like your all-in-one box. I mean, that's what Sony wanted to do from the very beginning, and somehow Microsoft managed to do it. But these numbers, I mean, this is like the tail end of the life cycle when it comes to these devices. So I'm really curious to see what's going to happen when they get refreshed.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think the Wii U is a good representative of what's going to happen with the other two consoles when they get refreshed. So I don't think console gaming is dead. And as Lepton pointed out in the chat room, console buyers and mobile gamers are not exclusive. People can do both, and in some cases, they definitely will. Let's talk about the return, sort of Flickr photos to Yahoo Image Search. What's going on there, Sarah?
Well, I'm following closely, you know, everything that happens at Yahoo, and particularly when it comes to Flickr, just because I really want Flickr to be cool again, you know, under the reign of Marissa Meyer. This is kind of cool. Using a Yahoo image search, so obviously you go to Yahoo search and then you filter by image, very similar to Google search, and Yahoo's had this for a while. Via the web or a mobile device, you can find photos from Flickr, but not just that, you can also filter by photos that are available for reuse or reposting under Creative Commons terms. So you just go to the image search, type in whatever you're looking for, and then there's a little left-hand drop-down section where you can say, you can filter by what's available for reuse or reposting. It's called labeled for reuse. And then you can see photos that you can reuse. Now, I searched for myself. I searched for Twit TV. When you filter by reuse, obviously, a lot of the results go away, but that's actually helpful. You know, if you really are looking for something that has a Creative Commons license, that's good. You know, you don't want to be using stuff that you'd be getting in trouble for. And what's nice is that if you find something that you like, you just hover over the thumbnail. You can see details about the photo, the photographer who took the photo, stuff that Flickr does really well. Flickr has tons of data about every photo. But it's kind of neat to start seeing some of this result in top-level search results as well. You can see specific Creative Commons licensing terms for images, because there are varying levels. You can click on attribution link to get more information there. And if you're kind of into a photographer, you can click on the little I button for information, and then you can see the rest of their photo stream on Flickr. That's cool too, because this is Flickr. You know, Flickr is... Even though Flickr has waned with a lot of photographers over the last few years, there's a lot of data there. And it's cool to see Yahoo recognizing that Flickr should sort of be part of the Yahoo ecosystem, especially when it comes to images, even videos, really, because you can upload shorter videos to Flickr as well. This isn't anything too mind-blowing, but I definitely see it as a trend in the right direction of Yahoo making their strong products part of what, again, Marissa Meyer was really used to doing at Google, and that's integrating these products, especially when it comes to something as simple as search.
I think
back in the mid-2000s, I was a big fan of Yahoo Image Search before they had Microsoft power it with Bing because they had Flickr built in, and you'd find so many more cool images that way. So I'm glad to see them bring it back and improve it as well. What were you going to say, Ayaz?
I was going to say that Google did have this ability. You could find things that had licenses under Creative Commons. I thought it was easier before the redesign. I believe it was in Google Advanced Search. So I was testing out how easy is it to find one of these Creative Commons images. I was looking up Texas just as a random one. And it the Yahoo interface, when it comes, once you realize that there's a left-hand rail, because on my when I was doing it this morning, it was by default squished. You have to click a little button and the left rail shows up, as you can see in the video. And it makes it really easy to find things. To integrate this Flickr into Yahoo, it seems like that would be such a natural thing that it should have happened years ago. And it seems like such an easy synergy that should have been there. But I'm not sure why it took so long for it to finally manifest. But it's a nice, like, another step in Yahoo trying to figure out what to do. Because I've got a soft spot for Yahoo when it comes to this. I've been tracking this too. And I'm hoping that we actually see some differentiation when it comes to search engines. Because Google's really great and Bing does local really well. But what's Yahoo going to do for its spin when it comes to being different?
All Yahoo has to do now to make that search result for images look better is to just adopt the Flickr logo style. That's the one thing. You look at that page and you're like, that looks really great, except for the upper left-hand corner and that dumb Yahoo logo. Wouldn't it be nice if Yahoo just looked like Flickr?
You just like that clean font. Is that it?
I just feel like it's the only thing on the page that I'm like, ugh, I don't like it. It's just, that looks gross. It's old. It looks like Candyland or something. The rest of it looks fine. Anyway, that's just me.
All right, let's finish up with a randomizer. Thank you, GLaDOS. Thanks to Strengths, who sent us this link right before the show at International Business Times. IBM's Watson, which is working in the medical industry right now, has had a swearing problem. Apparently, the researchers had added Urban Dictionary to its vocabulary in an attempt to give it more of a natural feel. Unfortunately, partly because Urban Dictionary has been overrun with a bunch of slang swearing, this led to Watson inappropriately saying swear words when talking to its people in the research station, not out in the place where it's being used in the medical world yet. So they had to remove Urban Dictionary. And the article says they actually ran into this problem with Wikipedia at one point, too. So they've had to build a filter to keep swear words from coming out of Watson's mouth. I kind of like the idea of a seriously natural language, Watson.
Come on, why can't Watson be street? I mean, come on.
They should have a different version.
Yeah,
I want to see that version on Jeopardy. I know that Watson was on Jeopardy, and if Watson got something wrong, I want to hear it swear when it got something wrong.
But Paul, I mean, really here in the United States, swear. we have a weird relationship with swearing. Would that be a problem in New Zealand?
Maybe less so in Europe, where, you know, a lot of countries English isn't the first language, and so you know, to them swearing's just what they hear on you know, in the media. They're a little bit more relaxed about it. I think it would be cool if they actually left it in and it could be turned on and off depending on the situations. There's some situations where you know, it could certainly add a fairly comical element. I would have thought so. You know, why get rid of it entirely?
Yeah, they should hold on to it.
I like Garst in the chat room. Watson must be a sailor. Okay, maybe I'm the only one that thought that was funny.
I thought it was funny.
Let's move on to the calendar.
Oh, Jason, I thought it was funny. Don't listen to Tom. Yeah. Wikimedia Foundation has launched the travel site Wiki Voyage. It's not actually fully operational, but Jimmy Wales was on the Colbert Report a couple nights ago, and he says within the next, I think he said week, so let's just say 2 weeks to be safe, it'll be a operational, basically a travel version of Wikipedia, not for profit. So it will operate under the Wikimedia Foundation, just as Wikipedia does. Kind of exciting. We'll take a look at it when there's more to it. But the site is live at wikivoyage.org. And tomorrow we have a birthday to celebrate. HAL 9000, everybody's favorite. Well, the robot that ended up not being very human friendly was born on tomorrow. Well, I would say this day, but it's actually tomorrow, but we won't have a show on Saturday. In either 1992 or 1997 in the fictional story, depending on who you ask.
I was actually in Champaign-Urbana going to school at the University of Illinois when his birthday happened, the 1992 one, actually. And they had a big party because he was supposedly in the book born at the University of Illinois. So it was kind of fun. Let's move on to what's incoming.
Incoming message.
And Jason, I'm sorry. The sailor joke was funny.
It's okay.
My dad was in the Navy. Okay. You know?
close sore spot. I'm sorry.
What do we got in email?
We got an email from Einel. He says, "Dear TNT crew, I am disappointed with the former host of Tech History Today, Mr. Tom Merritt, for failing to see yet another blatant attempt by Samsung to copy something from Apple. It should have been quite clear that when Samsung announced the Galaxy S2 Plus, they were just copying Apple's naming convention, but this time from an earlier product line. It won't be too long before we will see the Galaxy S2e and the Galaxy S2c, although I wouldn't hold my breath for the Galaxy 2GS and the 2c Plus."
Oh my gosh.
Let the lawsuits begin.
Does this mean we're going to get a Samsung Newton?
Isn't that what the note is? The Noten.
The Noten.
Got another email from Marlon, who calls himself the guy from Trinidad. He says, "Hi, TNT crew. One of the things I loved when I got my first Kindle was starting it up and seeing Marlon's Kindle, and in seconds getting some of the books that I had ordered appear on it ready for me to read. Now, when I think about it, with this auto rip deal that Amazon has, you buy your Amazon phone, and then after you boot it up and put in your Amazon username, you immediately start streaming your music. I think the Amazon phone is coming."
What did you think? Paul, Amazon, does this imply more Amazon phone grist for the mill?
Oh, you're muted.
Unfortunately, Paul, you muted yourself. So, yeah.
Apologies.
There we go.
I guess the rumors around Amazon coming out with a phone have been going around for a long time. I don't know whether we're there any closer or not, but I'd be interested to see just what they would bring to the market. You know, certainly what they've done with the Kindle line, has been so well received. And yeah, I'd expect if they do bring something to the market, it'd be pretty cool.
All right, well, that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Paul Spain, thank you for joining us and for finding a good internet connection that you could be on. I know that's not easy at CES, so let folks know where they can find your work.
So they can track me down at on Twitter, of course, Paul Spain, there are links to sort of my blog content and so on from paulspain.com if they want to jump in there.
Excellent. Check those out and check out our subreddit as well, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's a place where you can submit ideas for stories you'd like us to cover or vote on the stories that have been submitted. We definitely pay attention to that when we get a lot of votes on that stuff. Also, best of, it's never too early to start collecting the best of. Jason could attest to that. It was a lot easier to put together our best of episode last month since we were collecting things all year. So go to twit.tv/best of if there's any moments you'd like to submit to be put in our year-end 2013 episode. I will be in Petaluma on Monday, as will I, as Sarah and Jason, and we'll be joined by Father Robert. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. See you Monday.